You know, as many artists working in the field of new media and other fields, we don't feel usually very satisfied by the sticker that say that we are either digital artists working on with computers and things like that. When this is not exactly probably what we aim to do, we are more thinking about probably saying something sometimes with the tools that make it possible. And I think the way to take into consideration the fact that after the technology wave, we probably are open to any kind of expression, any medium, any support, any let's say surface, and that we try to see how the medium we use can fit to the meaning we want to produce and to say. So, first of all, I have to apologize about my English that is a bit... I don't find the word, so you see. Okay, so I have to go, I have to be a bit fast, but I will try to be slower with the words because I know that pronunciation don't make it easy to understand. So I started very traditionally with painting, and then I made a lot of photo during the 80s, and then I started to make video installations, and also as Renee mentioned, I've been working a lot on questioning artists, interrogating artists about what they are doing. Why they still do art in the 80s, that was my question. And then I was not really satisfied by the answers, and I started just to try something else. So I worked with computer graphics, and of course these things, producing a kind of realistic representation of the world, the question of the truth was of course something that came to my mind immediately. So I've been working about using bugs and how we can play with the limits of the tools. And at this time, when you wanted to do something, you had to have it known by other people in order to find means to do new works. So I decided to do something that would be a conceptual work broadcast in prime time on television. So this became The Quarks. The Quarks was a series of very short film, 3 minutes film, made of computer graphics, and it's probably one of the very first series broadcast on TV of that kind. So I just show you a sample of that. So it started in 89, and the series, the full series, was broadcast in 13 different countries in 93. So just to have some images of the introduction of the series.
The time has come for me to reveal everything I know about quarks. These strange beings which defy all scientific laws. Fragmentopa.
I'm not gonna let you see that. So you see the look at the beginning is very conventional, and of course that was the key to access a prime time program. And everything after was looking like a scientific program about invisible living beings that would have been discovered by a scientist specialist of the comparative cryptobiology. And that is a new science, of course, that deserves to be explored deeper, but we didn't have the time, and we don't have the time now to go deeper inside. Just understand that he discovered the elastofragmentoplast, the spiral thermophage, the polymorph of Proximans, the electricia, the nemochroma, and many other quarks that are just a bit doubtful, and we hope that later it will be possible to check if they really exist around us. Okay, so that was, actually it was just something about what happens if we try to change the laws of physics, biology, all the scientific laws, optics. What happens if we reverse the time? And so what could be the living beings in this kind of context? Let's say that I did that, I ended this theory in 93, and then I thought, this is not what I'm looking for. I don't want to make animations, this is not my job. I'm more interested in how to create the context and to see how things can evolve. And then I started to work with more virtuality than virtual reality. Virtuality, because for me, it was a required condition of the plasticity of the world. If there is no virtuality, just can imagine the world stopping just before the Big Bang. And this is only possible because virtuality is part of the world. And as a part, as an interesting part of the world, I thought it could become a medium for producing art. So I was considering at this time that I was actually working virtuality as a medium, and not talking about virtual reality, even if I use that kind of technology, but more about the fact that you write something that will produce a result that you don't really can predict, but you create a situation that plays with this property of the world that is to have a possible evolution. So I will be more explicit. So I wanted to say that I'm not working on an image. I'm not making images. And so I used to say that that the artwork is at the deep end of the image on the right. Probably close to the toilets or something like that. So when I started to work with tools that we call now virtual reality, I was thinking just at the beginning, should it be full or empty? What is the blank page of virtual reality? And so I decided to do work starting with a full world, full of something. And so it was a series, the big questions. The first one is God Flat. Was produced in 94 and presented not an immersive virtual reality, but just on a screen in a small monk room where it was possible to do this experience of exploring a world full of bricks. So imagine you are in a world completely closed with no window, no doors, but when you move inside, the corridors are dug in the direction where you go. And so you understand that there is a resulting labyrinth, a resulting maze, that is exactly the print, the footprint of your experience of life, of your experience of the world, inside this world. And of course, it looks like a video game. And if you're lucky, you find images floating in the space, transparent, and become opaque, coming to you. And there are images of the creator of the world emerge in a world created by man, by the humankind, let's say. And of course, after a while, you're bored by running after pictures, and so you just enjoy the fact you can move inside the space, and without any hope to find an exit, you appreciate the fact to modify the world around you, even if it's in a very constrained way. The third of the big question was, is the devil curve? Actually, this was asked by a TV channel, a French TV channel, who asked me recently, is God flat, in Imagina with a computer graphics event. And I said, it's not possible to present it, is God flat there, so we're gonna do something specific. Is the devil curve is exactly the same principle, except that we are moving in the sky. So, as you can understand, this thing has an autonomous behavior. It's coming to you, and actually, you give it pleasure just by coming close to it. It's made of five spheres and produce sounds that are, of course, decided in real time. And if you are not interested in this thing, another one will appear elsewhere with a different combination of five spheres. And it takes time to the user, to the visitor, to understand that actually this thing has a mission that is to seduce you by any means. And for that, it's just checking what is the best combination of five spheres in order to seduce you. And telling you exactly the way the TV channels do that in prime time, telling you that you are the best and you give it a lot of pleasure, so please stay. Stay with us. And of course, I had to do a political, a PC version, a politically correct version, using animal sounds and at the beginning, and with the color going from dark brown to acid pink in order to be completely multiracial. And at the same time, let's say the same month, I was asked to do something between Paris and Montreal. And so I proposed to dig a tunnel because I was digging corridors. So that became the tunnel under the Atlantic that linked the Pompidou Center in Paris to the Museum of Contemporary Art in Montreal during IZEA 95. So that it was like a tube. Actually, the tube was just here to hide the projector. And we were in front of material that constitute an obstacle to meet between the two continents. And this obstacle is actually the culture. So we had to dig inside the common past of both countries in order to meet each other. This was done by converting the image into a material like marble. And if we dig inside, we can see details like paintings, cheese boxes, and if we dig a lot, we create big caves like that where we have the feeling to have fragmented memory. And this is an argument to discuss with the other one, because the voice gave the direction where to go in order to meet. And so we talked about what we met in order to understand what it is. And also, at the same time, we have the video of our face floating where we are digging. And after 5 days, because people came 1 or 2 hours a day, came the day after and after. After 5 days, we finally met each other. First meeting.
Voilà. Alors, Mathieu, on te voit, Montréal.
Oui, on te voit.
Salut, Mathieu. Oui, oui.
Je vous vois avec un col blanc.
Oui.
Vous êtes rouge avec un col blanc.
At this time, I was talking about architecture of communication. And for me, of course, what was important was the idea that the space wouldn't be defined as a traditional painting, for example, as something done forever, and could become something that would be the experience of being part of the work, as not something we have decided, because the way we dig has been decided by the author, but by the collective experience of meeting. As you can see, it's not about transmitting information. We say nothing else than you're dressed in red with a white color. In this case, you understand that this work, the fact to meet, is probably very close to what we call in communication theory and the phatic function. That is, establish a contact and maintaining the contact. It's more about that. So people came 2 hours a day just to be there at this time. And the emotion was really intense in a way that we can consider it's very close to what happened in the movie when, after Alfred Hitchcock, we are actually running after a MacGuffin, something that doesn't deserve to be explicit. doesn't deserve to be precise, but that is really fundamental to justify what we are doing. And many works I did after was about this question of not creating communication with tools that do that very well without me, but more interrogating and questioning the fact that we are trying to be in touch with the rest of the world. Why, what for, how, and how we can appreciate what is the real objective of the experience. At the same time, it was semantic space, because by digging, we not only decided of the architecture, but we also enjoyed the fact that we were moving inside the pictures in a way that was auto-organized. Because the system analyzed our interest in the previous picture and decided on the next one according to that. So at the same time, we had something doing semantically exactly what the geometry of the space was doing. Then for the first time, I decided to work using not only real-time graphics, but also immersion, that is supposed to be one of the components of a virtual reality. And for me, it was the way to go back to my first love, that is work on situation, what I was doing when I was doing video interviews of artists. And so then came WorldSkin. WorldSkin was in 1997, presented in Ars Electronica Linz in the cave. So as you probably know, the cave is this box, not only the Plato's cave, even if it's the original reference, but it's a cubic box where walls and ground and the ceiling are actually images, real-time images, and you see in 3D, thanks to the glasses. So you can see your body, you can see other people, but you see also the world around you as completely open. So you move inside this environment, and as you are new in this country, in this place, you are tourists. And so we give you a photo camera. And you move in a space made of photos of the Second World War and the Bosnia War. You really take it. So you remove it from the scene. What has been framed by your camera is removed and it's printed out. So you can live with the pictures you have taken and nobody else can take them. But instead of erasing the space, erasing the traces of the wall, you're actually creating ghosts. The ghosts that are remaining. And so this is to understand also this work, it's important to know that Linz in Austria was also the city where Hitler and Wittgenstein went to school, in the same school at the same time. And it was at the time of the Bosnia War. So both pictures are real photos, real elements of videos, stills from videos from both worlds. La Bilogue is a tribute to Borges, the Library of Babel. It was in the year 2000. And actually, it's not supposed to move so fast. So please, sorry for the video, but I don't have enough. It has been done only once, and I don't have other material. So we are moving in a labyrinth where we are talking with other people in other countries. It was Dakar, Senegal, Brussels, and Lyon in France. And when you talk with the other, worlds are recognized. And these words are said out loud. And a text is written on the wall you're looking at. And this text is actually telling the story of your meeting with the author. So the text generator was written by Jean-Pierre Balbe, and the sound work by Jean-Baptiste Barrière, with whom I've been working on most of the works you see here. So we are actually moving inside the text being written. Crossing Toads is another work done in Japan, in Tokyo, in the year 99. And I think it will be too long to show you this one because it's difficult to explain. But what I call communication rafting is that actually inside the cave, we move according to the place we have in the space. So we can fall because the space tilts. And we are actually moving inside rooms made with the pictures of people using internet to communicate, video chats. But it was 99, it was not so common. And actually, what was important for me was the fact that when you want to communicate with somebody on the internet, you have to stabilize the world. And for that, you have to start communicating with people close to you. And this challenge of being in touch with people very far away and really in touch with people close to you is really what happens in this world that has been presented only once in Tokyo, in ICC Tokyo. In the year 2000, I started to do the works using the experience of watching. So Art Impact, Collective Retinal Memory, was presented in the Pompidou Center. And here it's actually in the Kiasma Museum in Helsinki. The day before the opening of a big art exhibition in France called La Beauté in Avignon, I proposed to the people from the visitors at the Pompidou Center to watch panoramas of installations thanks to virtual binoculars. So people were just looking at photos, spherical photos, and just enjoying the fact to be able to see the works in Avignon. What they didn't notice immediately is when they were doing that, they were actually painting with their gaze. They were painting what I call the collective retinal memory. That is another panorama, a kind of palimpsest, where only the things spotted by the people, by the visitors, are like airbrushed on the previous experience of watching. And it's collective not only because people come one after each other, but also because it was possible to do it on the internet at the same time. It's still possible to do it on the internet, actually. And so, just to give you some samples of this collective retinal memory. Of course, I added some places that were not really art, like the slaughterhouse, the corridor of the supermarket. So this is time of that. Narrative version, I have no time for that, but it was during Future Cinema Exhibition, where you create a story just by watching. No time, sorry. You know, immersion is the fact to introduce reality, I mean the visitor, inside the fiction, the virtual reality world. And immersion was not exactly what I was looking for, because I wanted really what I introduced at the beginning, to shift the world even a little bit. And so I was interested by the reverse proposal that is to introduce fiction inside reality. And to introduce fiction inside reality is, of course, very close to what the situationists used to call the society of the spectacle. We can go very far in the direction of building illusion and just make a kind of a cosmetic action on the world. So I'm interested by the concept of critical fusion. That is to introduce fiction inside reality to make it understandable. And I think an important part of interesting artists now, I think, are working in this direction, whatever the name they put on it. One of the work I started to do in this way is a reverse panopticon. You will see why. It's called Watch Out. It was in the year 2002. And Watch Out is something pretty simple. I put boxes like that in the street and with a hole. And so people see that, go to the hole, look inside, and see a small screen where it's written, send a warning message to the world. And it's very important to send warning messages. So people, thanks to SMS messages or internet, send messages like save the whales, be careful with water, and things like that. Yeah, and it's very important. So this is why these boxes were everywhere in the streets of Seoul. What they didn't notice immediately is that when watching inside the box, actually, their eye was watching the world. Converting any visitor in a potential big brother. In the exhibition space was this box where it was possible to get inside and have the feedback of the different cameras, converting really this in a Bledo scale, where you see a blurry world and sometimes a face coming, an eye becoming very sharp, and getting away very fast because doesn't look so interesting. But at this time, it's you inside. In Athens, another version of it. Cosmopolis is also about, it's about collective retinal memory, but applied to the city. And it was in the year 2005. I had to build, it was for China. So I had to build big projectors. Telescopes, and so that was a project with 12 screens creating a big panorama and 12 telescopes to explore 12 different cities around the world. And then by watching 12 cities, you create one in the middle. So there are some other layers. This is some of the panoramas that has been done to, it's not touristic panoramas, it's more panoramas that help us to understand why the city has been developed in that way. For example, Shanghai. Shanghai is very clearly expressed here. And so this was just to explain the collective retinal memory thing. And so the other part was to analyze. This is the work. Okay, you see it done before leaving France for Shanghai. Jean-Baptiste Bayen, the middle. And I think it was more 10,000 people a day here at this time in Shanghai. Here, it's in Chongqing. So I appreciate Chinese openings. This exhibition was the opening exhibition of the Museum of the Three Gorges, the museum, the one built to keep all the traces of the big dam that has been built on the Yangtze, moving 1,200,000 people. I'm late. So you see the memory written here. Okay, second one. I told you I'm late. Another project in Shanghai, it was in 2008. The project is that it was No Reason that became No Reason and Neo Reason. And so that's the concept I sent was this one. It's for Century Avenue, so a big avenue on Pudong. And the ivy worms are crawling in the street in order to absorb, to swallow people's identity. Mm-hmm. So the identities are converted into flash codes, QR codes. And so you can use them after you get a ticket where you can get them. And actually these codes, so you see how you are converted. This is a way. So they become your identity. And on the big screen behind, this is QR codes growing and becoming the building. So you see this growing. I spent a lot of time in China during the year 2005. And so for me, it was a very shocking experience to see how people are converted into building in a first sense of the way, in a very literal way. Okay, not enough time. So this Arc de Triomphe exhibition was a real challenge because I was asked to do the permanent exhibition inside the Arc de Triomphe. So you see, this is, now I know what this is called. You see over the red dots, there are two levels that were an exhibition dedicated to the Arc de Triomphe was created in the 30s of our last century, and now they wanted something new. And so I made a proposal that was a way to interrogate the meaning of the national monument. What does that mean in the year 2008, that was the time, 2006 the beginning, because it was two centuries of the monument. What does it mean to have a monument dedicated to the Napoleon army, considered as a national monument? How a national monument can take into account the meaning, the values of its time? That's a very difficult point. So I decided, you know, this monument is placed in a big line called the historical way path. And actually I created inside a slope that is following the meridian. So it's made of steel, very huge, and it's talking about how the symbolics of the monument evolved. It looks like a cave inside, so I propose to use the only hole, the one to put the flag, the cable of the flag, to put a video camera there. So on the ground, if you do that, you can see the people on the ground as if you would be little gods. And so you can see all the ceremonies and so on. So, of course, when I do this kind of work, I have to say all the arguments people want to hear. So I tell them, it will be possible to follow the ritual of frying, of activating the flame. So you see that this is the shadows and things like that. So this is the first time it was possible to see the outside from inside. And so you see the other thing. Images are too heavy. And on the right, there is something that was interpreted like a blue, white, red flag. That is actually in a competition between war and peace. So you have pictures going very fast, flickering very fast, and you can play like on TV shows. You can play the speed and stop and try to and see what this picture is about. So it's about this oscillation, this hesitation of the monument between the two symbols of peace and war. I cannot detail the story, and this is something to reverse the monumental situation. And this is a augmented reality telescope at situ, you know, the lab René has been talking about. We are developing an augmented reality telescope to work on the city. What does it mean to watch the city? What do we discover with that? And how we can have an artistic appropriation of watching the city. So this will be a permanent installation on the Arc de Triomphe. I'm working on the mechanics of emotion. That is another big theme in which I'm working, on which I'm working. And it was 96, started on a very simple idea that internet might be the world nerve system. So in this case, we should be able to feel the pains and the pleasures and the pleasure of the planet. So I very simply analyze Google News and to see how the name of the cities are related to worlds characterizing emotions. And so I create maps as a basic interpretation, no, with no intention of interpretation, basic representation. And so out of these maps, I create a series of works. The first thing, for example, was to create sculptures. So this is a deflated sphere where the relief is just coming from the intensity of the emotion according to the location of the world. So you can recognize the continent sometime. So you see this is a Pacific Ocean and Japan is the highest level. And this is digitally carved out of the data coming from the web. So they are called the frozen fillings. And so I put the frozen fillings, the first, in a church where in 2005 I exhibited them as relics. And I projected the map of the fear on a big balloon. And the relics, like dead emotions, were supposed to carry a little bit of the original intensity of the emotion. 15 days after, I moved this, I took them from the temple to bring them to the merchant. So in Shanghai, the gallery at the top of the Red Thing, so it's a 700 square meters gallery, art gallery that I converted into a luxury shop. And the frozen fillings were presented like luxury objects. If you follow the history of art, when the paintings left the wall to be part of the market and become something else, and many things evolved that way. So I projected the maps of each emotion, and I put in the same space real frozen fillings, I mean digitally carved, and fake frozen fillings made by Chinese out of the photos, the 3D photos I made. And they were made in different material, like aluminum, resin, and also gold-plated aluminum. In the same exhibition, I presented the e-stock, emotional stock, where you see the rating of the different emotions for 3,200 cities around the world. And so I worked about manipulation. That was the opening of the Ars Electronica Festival in 2005, the same year. And we played with Jean-Baptiste Barrière, we played the maps of the emotion like music scores. And we interpreted them in real time, mixing emotions, just trying to do something very obscure, because of course we were not at all with the intention of interpret. Then it becomes possible to make business with that. So I started to make some tools for merchandising emotion, the emotions of the world. So this is the emotion vending machine. Very useful. You can select 3 emotions out of 9, and you get a musical cocktail, 30 seconds, that you can use as a ringtone for your cell phone. So I think it was 2006 or something. It was in Berlin, this one. Performance in Rotterdam, that was completely, forget it. But it was a good installation after in Palazzo Strozzi in Florence. I decided to take 3 emotions and to work on the tectonics of emotions. So how the layers of emotion become higher according to the place of the world. And so this culture is actually in sculpture producing infrasound. I mean, a music you cannot hear, but that speaks to your body directly. And when you touch it, you reveal some remaining emotions. So I have a video, but it's too long, to show you how people are reacting. So this was just to explain the project, but after I have some pictures. Yeah, that was the project. At the main entrance of the Grand Palais, and this is a sculpture at the place. And so I like this photo because explaining that my work is talking to the elite. Well, elite, you say? Elite. I'm kidding. Some people. I think I have to say sometimes people think that what I say is just to be taken that way. So when you touch it, you have the data revealed, only data, nothing else, because I'm not interpreting. But I like the fact that the result I got from the data looks like painting dripping over the sculpture. Unfortunately, I don't have the right for this photo because I didn't ask the father the authorization to use it. He was there, he saw me, but then you think too late. It's about considering that objects around us should become autonomous and could behave in a certain way. And this behavior would be very close to the behavior that could have a pet or a good friend. And so they would move freely if we are not here. They would recognize us just by our weight, how we sit on them, if it's a chair, and would start a dialogue with our body. I mean, not talking using any language. So that was just a conceptual design. It's not real design. And I'm working with a team now that is developing the concept in a way that all these things are communicating together, and it won't take too much time to explain. Just imagine. So this is dynamic. It's using actually word bodies. The video seems to be too heavy to. Well, just to explain that moves. Very simple. And so it's supposed to recognize how you sit on it, and what the best, what you like, how to use to communicate with. And if you put them together, the dialogue, and they try to find the best shape to create something that works with many people. Another kind of project is about attention economy. And this is a project called Last Life. I'm sure you cannot guess the reference to some existing Second Life thing. And this is a trailer to explain what will be this game online. Last Life is the only answer to Second Life. Last Life is the possibility for you to have a part of your life that is present in a city where you just have windows on everybody's life. And then, the best way to win is to decide if you want to be very visible to everybody, or if you want to be very discreet and very have the maximum of privacy and being there as well. So in this case, when somebody comes to look at your window and see how you, what you're presenting of your life, any second becomes second of life, that is the money that is used in this game. And you, so they pay attention to your life instead of living there. That's the way you win. Very simple. Not doing. That's a big question as well. So not doing is about my blog, the dump. It's called the dump.net. And the dump is the dump where I put all the projects I haven't done. Or the project I couldn't do, or the project I wouldn't like to do, or the project I cannot finance, or the project that are really beyond my know-how. So I just give you some samples. Very often, I did that during 2 years, and every morning I was putting something in the dump. So sometimes it's very simple ideas like that. Appartement témoin, you know, it's the flat you can visit when you want to buy a new flat somewhere. And so that's the name. It's a flat you get for free. It's exactly like when you have a car for free because you have advertising on it. Here, every month, you have a company coming and replacing the wallpaper with the magazine's pages related to the function of the place. And so you can decide of what you will buy afterwards. 45 degrees left is in a category, there are plenty of categories of artworks. And this one, the category is artist career design. So it's about designing the career of an artist that would be a photographer. And you know, we have the feeling that when we frame something, we are trying to select the best of the world in order to make it visible for other people. But that actually, maybe when we frame, we are trying to avoid what is outside. And so this photographer would decide to, every time he would like to take a photo, would move 45 degrees left and take this one. Just to be sure, sometimes, to get exactly what he's trying to escape from the frame. SaaS art, the SaaS, you know, is a double door you find in the banks to secure the place or the what you have in a submarine, the airlock system. And this is a gallery for a gallery. You put a double door, and inside you just have a small artwork hidden by a blind. You can see, so you cannot see the work from the window. So if you want to get inside the gallery to see it, you can. But you have to put your credit card, and the system checks if you have enough money on your account to buy it. Art Trap was conceived in the year 2000. And it's a room 4x4 meters with a door in the middle of each wall and four projectors. And actually, on the internet, you can buy the fact to have your name broadcast inside the big museum, contemporary art museum, where this room is placed, is located. So at the beginning, just for $1, you can get your name on the wall. But somebody comes and say, I put $10, so it becomes more expensive. You will have only 10% of the wall. And then the surface becomes more and more expensive. So every day I come, and with plaster, I reduce the size of the door in order to increase the size of the walls to make more money. And this is for a performance. I come, the idea is very simple, you know, I come with a bag and I forget my bag in the middle of a room in the museum where I like the paintings around. So the artwork gets installed and the caption and everything is there. And maybe I make a photo for my catalog. This is a very simple thing also, it's two laser beams with a steam that make it and then visible. And we can hear a dialogue between two people. But during the opening, or people visiting the exhibition, cut the laser and actually cut one of the person communicating, so another one switch. So the name of the exhibition would be only the phone number to call in order to be in touch. This one is quite easy to guess. It's an opera for a singer, male or female, that would perform on stage vocal improvisation using this, producing sound and music because it's an electronic instrument. Black Hole is in the series of what I call fan art. This is all these things, you know, using fans in contemporary art. It's interesting, this interest for fans. So, of course, every time I explain why it should be done, maybe. So this is very simple. Black Hole is inspired by James Searle. So it's a perfect black. You see nothing, no depth, nothing. But when you get in front of it, you are sucked. reverse proposal, since fine art as well, Inside Out. Inside Out is you put curtains, you put fabric around the windows and big fans behind, creating inside, outside. Genomic archaeology, I love this one. It's a tribute to Jean Lanier, who proposed this amazing architectural proposal that is to create a library that would be only coding all the books, or the content of the books, inside the cockroach DNA, because they are the only one to survive after bombing. I find the idea so good, so excellent, that I thought if any kind of intelligence was on Earth before us, they probably thought about it. So we should start to decipher the cockroach DNA. Then also a project I couldn't do, you know, when I was doing this thing for the Arc de Triomphe, they made a big advertising campaign. And so I say, okay, we're going to have the La Concorde metro station. So I would like to have on one side something like peace, and on the other side, guerre, red and blue. Very simple, very basic. They say no. after L'Arc de Triomphe, I thought we should do L'Arc des Fêtes. Of course, it's a bag of defeat and triumph. It's just a reverse proposal, you know, so it's an empty volume that is just taking exactly the same space as L'Arc de Triomphe, so to balance, you know, both of them. That was the original idea for last life. Some projects, many projects actually, from the dump has been done now, because people take it as a catalog to select the next project to do. And so that was my first argument for last life. Reminder, last life, what else? Last life, enjoy. That was very clear. A theoretical project, and then finally, I wrote an article called Art After Technology, but this is to write a book about art after technology. And I wrote an article in Technology Review, but the French edition, and I don't know why this one was not displayed. So nobody read it. I see a sign in that. And the dump actually became probably the first blog that has been converted into a thesis, a doctorate thesis. And so in La Sorbonne, I have defended it under the title Artistic Intentions at Work, Hypothesis for Committing Art. So you see the context, international jury, a very official thing. And my discourse of introduction was the last post in the dump, in a 4 pages phrase, a phrase that lasts 4 pages and just explaining the thing. So I read it, and that was, imagine the dildo on the screen. So they were discussing Harvey. And just to finish, why, again, with open art, I've been asked to participate to this call of a concept for a place in UK called Seventh Carsday Hall, where they want to create the pavilion of post-contemporary creating. And it's a building that is completely empty, so I propose only 4 pictures. And where you can see Open Art Manifesto inside, but also Hermitcraft, expanded art practices, sustainable expansion, cross-border, cross-frontier, cross-frontier, archer, cozy corner, inside out, walls, walls, and so on. And expanding art, I say, panoptic art as well. Something that would grow inside, you know, and exceeding the shape from the past, exceeding the cultural heritage, in a way. That was the idea, and I think that's all. So, it's very difficult. It's very touchy when you work in China.
Yeah.
Because you have to do the thing in a way that becomes. It's exactly the same thing. When I'm talking about critical fusion, this is what I say. When I work on the Arc de Triomphe and some other place, there is what you say to have your work accepted, and then what you do can be a bit different, not so much different. And so I'm sure. The politics in China just found entertaining to have red things in the street and to have protection and to have things that look techy, high-tech. But actually it's about neutralizing people. It's about dissolving the people in the city. So I'm amazed. I got no reaction like that, so that's okay to me. But I think most of the people that experience it understood, of course, this, and it was written as well. So I think it was quite clear. And there is, I don't know if the play of word works in English, but no reason, no horizon, horizon. The exhibition was called Horizon. And of course, I'm hiding the horizon by using the barcodes. And the barcodes are coming from the flashcodes that have this neutralization of people and so on.
I had a question about the emotions project. Can you explain what algorithms you used to map emotions on two places?
And it's very simple. You cannot do it more simply. I'm not talking about the compass. It's very complex. I mean, in terms of how you build the real map of the emotion in the city. So I cannot take the time to explain that. But for the mechanics of emotion, I'm just checking on Google News how worlds characterizing, worlds of city, names of cities are related to worlds characterizing emotions. So I have a list of emotion, a list of cities, and I check how many hits I get. But I don't do, of course, only that. I introduce filtering in order to see more where something is happening. For example, I do it first with a number like now 2010. And I check how 2010 is related to the cities. And I consider it's a natural level. And then I see with emotion if we have something with different tendency. And in this case, it becomes meaningful. So this is more about that. But actually, it's mostly a metaphoric work where I'm trying to say that we can convert any kind of fluid into money and into values, symbolic values, economic values. And it's more about that. So for most of the words, I don't really care about how accurate is my tool. But on some words where I want to compare what happens if you change the words from one language to another, and the difference of vision of the world, that becomes more interesting. It's more important to have something accurate. And when you see that Africa, for example, becomes a series of islands, and even it's amazing to see that Australia doesn't exist. Well, it's not expected that way, but it's just a fact that you don't see it. There are probably many things you will analyze afterwards. But there is a story, of course, that I try to say. It's kind of opera, you know, but not only in 3 acts, 4 or 5 acts, but in 15 acts. And I'm still working on it. Yeah, regarding the question of open art, I consider that the digital time has completely changed the position of the artist, the posture. Can we say the posture?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now the artist, the accountant, the writer, the painter, the sculptor, the storyteller. Everybody is works in the same position, sitting in front of a screen with a keyboard in the hand, and mouse maybe. Very often, this is the situation we have. And this is why the artists are more and more shifting from one practice to another. They accept to use words, to use colors, to use volume, to use space, urban space, change of scale. So the interesting thing that when everything is open like that, when the categories are not anymore separated in a very, very clear way, what remains is exactly what does it mean to be an artist? What is the position of the artist compared to other practices and other people if it's not to use a specific tool? Our tools are not specific. We are not specialists of computers. We are not specialists of colors. We are not specialists of volumes anymore. So we are doing something specific that is of another kind. And for me, when I say shifting the world, what I mean is that I think as many people, I'm trying maybe to move either the point of view and also the things that I don't find so acceptable or where I think it's possible to consider them in a different way.
Can I ask
my
last question? You began with animation.
Yeah. This time.
Digitally,
you're right.
Animation. The last project that you displayed almost seems as if animation has come to life again in a meta-virtual sense. And one of the consistent aspects of your work throughout this period is a combination of critical reflection, planar experimentation, and volume. And I was just wondering if you could talk about your position in relationship to the current resurgence of animation and animated painting in somewhat of a simplified form.
It's difficult to say because when I presented Last Life, you see just a trailer because it has to look commercial. It has to look very commercial. So it's something you should find online. And there is an online version you can experience actually now. But it's not really, it wouldn't work with thousands of people connected. So it's just a prototype. For me, I'm interested by this animation because just playing the role, just play the game. But I'm more interested in what people will do with the windows, how they will use the space. It's more the social dimension and the metaphorical dimension of the thing that interests me. And I consider for many works that they become interesting if they really take place in the real world. This is why I was talking about petty confusion. You know, if I do something like that, if I talk about it, and it doesn't exist online, and you cannot use it, it's useless. You know, or it should stay in the dam. That is probably the right place.